This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ooh, Al Dang got paid.
Shout out him and Timofey Mozgov.
Oh, Timofey Mozgov will always be the biggest. That will always be the biggest the NBA has gotten out of control contract ever. Timofey Mozgov might be the guy single-handedly responsible for the new collective bargaining agreement.
You're probably right. He got like 456, I think, or something like that. Even that was like, at the time, that was insane.
At the time, that contract was nuts. But the cap had spiked. Was that the Kevin Durant year? The cap had spiked, and there was money to be spent, and these guys got it. I can't remember if that was the KD to Golden State year or not, but I remember the cap spiked that year, too.
They had 4 years, $64 million from the Lakers.
Okay, I don't even know if I could spell Timofey Mozgov, because it's not. You got it in front of you?
Yeah.
Spell it.
T-I-M-O-F-E-Y-M-O-Z.
Okay, there it is. That's ridiculous. That is just absurd. Timofey Mozgov, let's see.
Career 6-5, the career 7-5 player.
He signed that contract with the Los Angeles Lakers, right?
Yes.
In what year?
2016-2017. I'm looking at his stats right now. It was his first year with the Lakers.
He played 1 year with the Los Angeles Lakers on that contract. He played 1 year.
I don't even know how you justify giving him that deal at the time, because I'm looking at his stats. Like, the guy was never above 10 points besides 1 year.
He was terrible.
Yeah. He was 13th and sixth man of the year voting in 2013.
Timofey Mozgov played 8 years in the NBA. Oh, this would be fun. Timofey Mozgov played 8 years in the NBA. Knowing the contract that you, what did you just say it was? 4 years?
4 years, 64. I'd say he was around 80.
Man, you're killing it right now. $87.3 million.
Yeah, we've been on it.
I should give you the win piss Casey off, because I don't think Casey would have gotten that. $87.3 million. Hey, salute. Good for him. Made a nice little living doing minimal work at best. Just traveling. It's hilarious. He played one single season with the Los Angeles Lakers. Got traded to Brooklyn, and then finished his career in Orlando. Played all the way up until 2021, which I don't think I would have guessed.
Cavs legend.
Jesus. Matt George going to join us coming up in about 10 minutes, a little over 10 minutes or so. Matt George will be with us. The Sacramento Kings take on the Golden State Warriors tonight at the Golden One Center. Any hope for the sixth seed is riding on tonight's game at the Dental Office. And given the fact that the Minnesota Timberwolves, who won last night along with the Los Angeles Clippers, have now won six in a row. Any hope for the seventh seed likely lives off of tonight's game as well. The thing and I actually realize this is, you know, we're doing the show. I realize this live on the air. The Kings, since the last time they played Golden State, where they were blown out at home at the Golden 1 Center, 132-108, Kings are 5-2 in that stretch. It was called a stretch. They're 5-2 since that game. And one loss is obviously the last one. It's that beatdown at the hands of the New York Knicks. And the second loss, of course, was the night before, when Kawhi Leonard shot, bounced, and went in the rim. Or went through the basket, I should say. The Clippers loss sucked a lot more because they got their ass kicked by New York. I mean, of course, it would have been an opportunity to win. I think that would have been six in a row. Yeah, it was five straight, and they lost two straight. So that would have been six in a row. But it's a win against the Clippers. And this was the, you know, this was the thing starting the week, as we knew the schedule was going to get a little bit tougher. You got that really good win against the Rockets. But coming out of that Warriors game, you beat the Hornets. That's what you were supposed to do. You beat the Jazz. That's what you were supposed to do. Not only did you do, you beat them both handedly. You beat the Rockets. You know, you had a 48-minute game with the Rockets where they fought and fought and fought before you eventually, you know, I should say you fought them off. You know, you had a 7, 8, 9, 10-point lead for a while, and they kept pushing, and you were able to fight them off and wound up winning that game by, I think, like 10. Then you beat the Mavericks, who they were, you know, this is post-Luka. This is, you know, cast the game. Kyrie goes out. You saw the spirit leave that basketball team in that game. And then, of course, the Friday night game against De'Aaron Fox and the San Antonio Spurs. Both of those games were ass-whoopings. The Kings have won these games against bad teams exactly the way you want them to. And we knew looking ahead, okay, this is going to get a little bit tougher. Clippers, Knicks, Warriors, Suns the next night. It's going to get a little bit tougher. And my thing was, you got to win two of the next three. The three being the Clippers, the Knicks, and the Warriors. Now you don't have an opportunity to do that. And my main line of thinking behind that was, give me one of the Clippers or the Warriors, keep pace with everything that's happening in the conference by getting that one against the Knicks. The Knicks seem to be a brutal matchup for Sacramento. Like, they got punked by them two times this year. At the Garden and at the Golden 1 Center. Twice. I mean, I think it was, they put up 133 at the Golden 1 Center and, like, what was it, 143 at the Garden? Lost probably those two games by a combined maybe 40-ish. Man, I don't, that just appears to be a brutal matchup for them. But I wanted them to get two of the three. You can't do that. All right, I'm starting new. It's the Warriors tonight. And the Kings have a series of, they're not playoff games because qualifying and eliminating aren't really part of the equation yet. As long as they win enough games, I don't think that'll be a part of the equation at all till the end of the season is over, or till we get to the end of the season, I should say. But you want the six to be in reach, you got to get this. You want the seventh to be within reach, you got to get this. You want to stay out of, I don't think 10 is a threat. You know, stay out of that. Keep pace with the Clippers at 8. If you can't catch the Timberwolves, if you really do like the Timberwolves, you like the way that they're playing, you're buying what they're doing, or you did what we did, and you looked at their schedule realizing, okay, if they're at best splitting games with the bad teams, but they're, they're splitting games with the good teams, but they're beating the bad teams, bruh, they got a lot of bad teams ahead. They got a lot of bad teams that are probably going to get worse as we get closer and closer to the end of the season. So you might have to hang your hopes on the Los Angeles Clippers. Same thing. It's not a home game. 8. 7 or 8, whatever. Shoot, the Kings aren't even good at home. I'm going to retool my thinking here. 7 may not even matter. Give me 7 or 8 because I want them to be able to win one game rather than two. I don't give a damn if the game is at home or not because the Kings don't play well at home. There's no, oh, you got to play this game at the Golden 1 Center. It'd be huge. Like, based on what? Your imagination?
Might be a hindrance, actually.
Yeah, shoot, play it on the road. Play it in Minnesota. Hell, if Minnesota catches the Warriors, it could be in San Francisco. Play it in San Francisco. Team's 16-15 at home, 17-16 on the road. What's it matter? It's not the location of the game I care about. It's the amount of games they need to win to get to the playoffs. Clippers are still within reach. They're 36-30. Kings are 33-31. The number of games played will even out. Did we look at the Clippers schedule earlier? I know we have looked at schedules 1,000 times.
I think the Clippers are on the easier side when it comes to schedules.
It feels like everyone is on the easier side except for Sacramento. They're at Atlanta tomorrow, and then they're home. That's going to close out their 3-game road trip. Yeah, they play. Oh. No, this is, well, all right. They got Atlanta on Friday, and then the Clippers have Charlotte. They have Cleveland, Memphis, and Oklahoma City, a lot of the same teams that the Sacramento Kings are playing. Obviously, they're on all West Coast swings. And then the Clippers head out east. They've got the Knicks. They got the Nets. They got a second game against Cleveland, and then they got Orlando.
Yeah, I was wrong. Tankathon has them as the fifth toughest schedule remaining.
You got New Orleans, 2 games against Dallas on the 4th and 5th of April. You got a San Antonio game after that. And then the final 3 games of the season for the Los Angeles Clippers versus Houston, at Sacramento, at Golden State. The Kings, they could have a lot of control over where they finish based on those last 3 games alone, but you have to take care of business from now until then. That stretch is the final week of it's the final week of the regular season. It's in the middle of April. It's a month away. You got business to attend to right now, as the American Dream Dusty Rose will say. And again, it starts tonight. I guarantee you that is not the last time we've looked at the Clippers schedule. It's not the last time we've looked at the Timberwolves schedule. Hell, it might not be the last time we look at the Golden State Warriors schedule.
I guarantee we look at one of those team schedules tomorrow.
I'm sure we do. And all it takes is Kings get a dub tonight. Or I'll reframe this because I'm talking about the Warriors. Warriors lose to the Kings tonight. Then they got a game against the New York Knicks on Saturday and a game against Denver.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yep.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
And now, 2 pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs.
Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On Monday and a game against Milwaukee on Tuesday. All four of these games beginning tonight are at the Chase Center. That's their four game stretch right here. Sacramento, New York, Denver, Milwaukee. That's tough. This four game stretch could wind up saying a lot about the Golden State Warriors and how I feel about them, or the Golden State Warriors and how other people feel about them. This could be the moment that the Golden State Warriors solidify themselves as championship contenders, or it could be the moment that the Golden State Warriors come back down to the pack a little bit and give teams like Sacramento, Minnesota, and perhaps even the Los Angeles Clippers an opportunity to grab that sixth seed. We'll talk more Kings basketball when Matt George, the host of the Locked On Kings podcast and reporter over at ABC 10, joins us next here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Go ahead and run that question back, pal. Run the question back.
No. Okay. You was talking about grilling.
Yes.
And you said you were going to grill hot dogs. So
Dr. David asked if I grilled something else. We call them hot dogs.
But what I'm trying to ask is, like, when you say grill a hot dog, you're not talking about the, like,
I'm like, talking about between the bun.
No, I know that. I'm not talking about like the little like hot dogs that you cut up and give the kids. Like, are you cooking like a bigger sausage?
Damn.
I don't
know. No, hold on.
Forget
it.
No,
I get it. I get what you're trying to do, but it's just off principle.
Come
it's a
on, man.
I get it. Yeah, we'll go like the hot links and stuff along the lines of stuff like that. But
okay,
yeah,
thank you.
Like
I'm sorry.
Cheddar dogs and stuff like that.
All right, just forget
hot
it.
Links, cheddar dogs.
You can't do anything on this stupid show.
We already
show,
talking
man.
About grilling sausage.
So Matt said the camera's going to be off on purpose. So Matt, are you here with us?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another tour of the Chase Center.
Hey, let's go.
Today.
That is, you know what? It's funny. When you text me earlier, when you text me about Jesse earlier, it like I had a thought. Wait, is Matt in San Francisco? And then I thought, no, he would have told me that he couldn't do the shot. Oh, this is a great surprise. One of the greatest segments. One of the greatest Matt George segments. One of the greatest show segments ever. That mortified Matt George. You did not get how fun your tour of the Chase Center was.
Well, I'm leaning into the bit now, but no, I was absolutely mortified. But last time, D'Lo, we went that way.
Okay.
That's where we went last time.
Yep.
We're going this way this time. We're going towards like where the broadcast booths are.
Nice.
And the Thrive City entrance. So we'll see what we can find, but hello, how are you?
Well, terrific. If you hit the dead end in the Golden One Center because for some reason they decided you can't walk anymore here in this arena, can you show everybody? Because I think some people think I'm making it up. It's amazing.
I would be happy to.
It's just a dead end.
Let's see where I'm ending up.
Matt is at the Chase Center, just walking through hallways. It's probably carpeted. There's probably like pictures like you'd see at your grandma's house on the wall. So, well, what'd I tell you? What did I tell you? Right there. Maybe not like
okay.
at your grandma's house, but
so we are at the water side of Chase Center. You can see out there.
There it is. Very pretty.
Bay.
Yep. Very nice. Very nice.
Bunch of tables down here for some kind of event going on.
Very nice.
And then we have this, the lounge, I guess.
Okay. Because that's what, that's what the basketball
looks like.
It
looks like a Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, a lounge.
It's where you go to get your books.
Yep.
Buy the suites. Okay, because at Chase Center, you have your suites, right, where you go and you enter your suites to watch the game.
Correct.
But then when you just don't want to be in your suites, you could just sit at this round circular couch over here next to your suites.
Right.
But you still can't see the basketball.
And you can't see the game, yeah. Because why would you want to see the game at the Golden One Center? Or at the Chase Center, excuse me. Why would you want to see
the court is there. That is the court.
Yeah. On the other side of the walls.
Right. Right. I feel like I'm in a hotel. I feel like I'm at Marriott.
I'm worried about you being there too long. I feel like it might take your soul. I feel like that's what the Chase Center does, is it just takes your soul from you.
I survived the playoffs here. I think I can survive anything in this building at this point.
You definitely did that. You definitely did that, Matt. And there's going to be a playoff feel tonight. I caught the podcast this morning. I think you believe, like the rest of us believe, this is a massive game for Sacramento tonight.
Damian, before I answer that question, congratulations. We have hit the dead end.
I told you.
We'll hit that end with authorized personnel only.
I told you, at some point, the arena just runs out.
It's over. All right, well, I'm turning around. I'm going back where I came from. Yeah, I do think tonight's game, I'll go as far as to say I don't think the Kings have any shot at making top six if they don't win this game.
I'm with you.
Right, the tiebreaker implications for this alone, right? I mean, they're what? I think Jesse said earlier they're 3.5 back of seventh, which means they're either 4-4 or 4.5 back of six, which is held by the Warriors. And to get that spot, I personally feel that the Kings, like the best chance for the Kings is to tie the Warriors and then win via the tiebreaker, which they would get tonight.
Sure.
So winning this game not only brings them a step closer to eighth, seventh, and sixth, but it gives them that tiebreaker just in case they're able to chase the Warriors down in these final 18 games. So if they lose this game, I think the sixth seed and avoiding the play-in altogether, like we can put that to bed.
I'm 100% with you in that thought, but I do if we dumbed it down just a little bit in focus, because there is a games played component to the games back component. And if you look at Sacramento right now, who is sitting at 31 losses, you have the Los Angeles Clippers who are at 30. The Minnesota Timberwolves, who are at 29, and the Golden State Warriors, who are at 28. If you can pull the Golden State Warriors back to 29 losses tonight while you stay at 31, that makes it a little bit more digestible. Like it makes it a little bit more profitable. But I'm with you. Once you get, you move to 32 losses there at 28, you're not catching the Golden State Warriors the way that they're playing. And now I think a big concern is the Timberwolves won last night. The Clippers won last night. The Timberwolves keep winning. But the Timberwolves won last night. The Clippers won last night. Even if the thought isn't the six, keep pace with the 7 and 8.
Yeah, one of the things that the way I thought or the way I approached it was, like, don't rely on somebody else, because the Kings are already being proven just by everything you laid out there that no one's going to help them, right? They got to get it themselves. They got to basically, I think Kenny said it better a couple days ago, like, you got to win to get in, essentially. Like, you got to win your way there. So I feel pretty confident in saying that the Sacramento Kings are a play-in team. Like, I don't see them dropping below ninth where they're at right now.
Yeah.
But to climb into that seventh or eighth spot, which is significantly better, they need to win games like this, especially with the tough games coming up inside the Golden One Center with the Cavs and Boston and OKC that we've talked about, so we're blue in the face. But even with the Warriors surging the way they're surging, believe it or not, like in this stretch, this is one of the more gettable games that you have.
Yeah.
A road game against Golden State, a place that I know it was different circumstances. Zach Levine wasn't on the team. Jonas Valanciunas wasn't on the team. But De'Aaron Fox was out. And the Kings came into this building earlier this season and absolutely destroyed the Warriors. And you best believe the Warriors remember that too. So I don't expect it to be as easy of a a game for the Sacramento Kings, but I would expect that if the Kings drop this game, I think they know pretty comfortably that the goal should honestly be 8. I just feel like you can't really look beyond 8 if you lose this game here tonight.
For the radio audience, Matt George is live at the Chase Center for the Kings and Warriors tonight. Matt, you pointed out that Kings-Warriors game earlier in the season, it was not that long ago that the Warriors walked into the Golden 1 Center and beat the hell out of the Sacramento Kings so bad, Doug said, we need to talk. And yeah. Kings have been 5-2 since then. And unfortunately, like we're feeling a little rough about this team because they got beat up by the New York Knicks the other night. And, you know, that brutal loss in Los Angeles the night before with Kawhi Leonard's shot rolling in at the buzzer. But in the overhead view of this, this is a team that is 5-2, and it was a catalyst. The last time they played the Warriors was a catalyst to something that has seemed to gel this group together a little bit. Now, I got thrown for a bit of a loop because 2 games into that, Domantas Sabonis gets hurt and he exits. And I think we're all of the belief and understanding he'll be back tonight.
Yeah, that's – and hopefully we'll get an update on that. Doug might play that card close to the chest until just before tip-off. I imagine he's going to be like a game-time decision. But all signs point to Sabonis will be returning tonight. So fingers crossed for that. But that's where I actually look at – in a weird way, I look at the Knicks game with a little bit of optimism, because if you were to take the last handful of games – The outlier is that Knicks performance, yeah, right? They've been playing really good defense over the course of these games. Like, I think tonight's game, you should look at tonight's game, or at least I'm looking at tonight's game with every belief that this Warriors game is going to go very similar to the way the Clippers and Nuggets games went. Now, I'm hoping there's a win at the end of it, not just a close, painful loss.
Yeah.
But there's no reason to believe that the Kings can't play the Warriors as hard as well as they played both Denver and LAC. Unfortunately, they were just unable to close out the deal. And that's where I'm a little more concerned, right? Because if the Kings fight hard and bounce back from that Knicks performance, which I expect them to do so, have a close game down the stretch and lose again, that's where I'm starting to have those feelings again of that this is who this team is. They'll put up a fight, they'll be competitive, but in the end, they'll just end up falling just short. So hopefully the Kings avoid that. But I'm not thinking about that Knicks performance in terms of, oh, that's what this team is and that's what we're going to see tonight. I think that's the outlier. In some ways, I think you can crumple that up into a ball and throw it away.
I think you're right. I certainly hope you're right. Certainly in the most recent games, that absolutely has been, as you just pointed out right there. Is there a scenario because, you know, they beat Houston. I think the other one was – no, I'm sorry, it was Utah. They beat Charlotte. They beat Utah. They beat those 2 bad teams immediately in the aftermath of that Golden State Warriors game. They came out and beat Houston there, and that's where Domantas Sabonis gets hurt. We've seen Zach LaVine play really well. We've seen your boy Keegan Murray play really well. Is there any potentially negative impact on Domantas Sabonis' return to the lineup, given the fact that he really is the facilitator, the orchestrator of everything, and we've seen a lot of we've seen the offense kind of conduct itself a little bit differently with, as they've had to, a necessary adjustment, but we've seen them, you know, adapt a little bit without Domas out there. Do you think there's a potential negative impact?
I think the defensive impact will be negative, but it doesn't have to be plummet or catastrophic, right? Because you're playing good defense with 2 not necessarily good defenders in your lineup already with Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan. They figured enough out to be able to play effective defense with those guys still playing heavy minutes on the floor. So Domantas Sabonis is not such a negative defender that he's going to come back and things are going to plummet. But things will look different than Jonas Valanciunas getting 35 minutes a night. I mean, I know the Knicks game was a blowout, so we didn't really see the full minutes. But Keon Ellis only played 18 minutes in that game in the first game that Malik Monk returned. So less of Keon Ellis, less of Jonas Valanciunas on the floor, there's going to be a negative impact for the defense. However, the last 2 games, D'Lo, the Kings haven't scored 30 points in a quarter. Like, that's very unusual for this team to have 2 games in a row where they didn't score more than, I think, like 28 or 29 points just in one of them. Like in the LA Clippers game that they nearly won and arguably should have won, I think the most they scored in a quarter was 26. So I'm looking at that, and my reaction to that is, yes, it's fair to be concerned or to even believe, like I do, that there will be a defensive drop-off with Malik and Sabonis coming back and taking the 35-plus minutes a night that you expect them to have as starters. But the offensive boost that they bring is more than capable of making up for some of that defensive drop-off. As good as the Kings have been holding teams to in the mid to low 100s, they've only been scoring like 110 themselves.
Yeah.
So can you get back to scoring 120 but hold teams to that 110, 115 range? That's where I think you can be optimistic about the return of Domantas Sabonis. Sabonis returning is never, ever a bad thing. You'll just look different.
I'm with you. The offensive production that you just laid out there, and I didn't notice that at all. I mean, sure, you look at like the overall, so I didn't really notice that about the quarter scoring. Do you think that's a direct result of Domantas Sabonis being out?
Sabonis and Malik Monk, and I don't think it's a coincidence. Yeah, right. Now, Monk was the most rested, right, the other night, so yeah. I don't think it's a coincidence at all that Malik came in, and I think he led the Kings in scoring with, like, what, 21 or 22 points or something like that. But as good as Keon Ellis has been shooting the basketball, he's not a shot creator. I mean, Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan have relied on a lot of ISO heavy scoring because you can run pick and rolls and things like that through Jonas Valanciunas, but it's not the same as the three-headed monster that Domantas Sabonis is, where he can pull up and shoot. You can run the DHOs through him. You can run pick and rolls through him, pick and pops with him. Like, it just opens up the offensive opportunity. Well, of course, here comes the dance team now. Every time I come to the damn arena trying to do a radio show, this dance team.
Poor Matt George, just trying to do a radio conversation and got to come out and dance.
But yes, I think the lack of two starters who are very offensively gifted players and who are your primary playmakers.
Yeah,
I think that really hurt Sacramento in their scoring over these recent games.
Actually, forgot Malik missed a stretch. Just completely forgot about that. We know Jake LaRavia is back in the lineup as well. I don't say that tongue in cheek. I mean, you need bodies out there, and he's been really good. Do you think with the way that Valanciunas has played, really since the very beginning of that Rockets game, that there might be a little bit more of a need or a desire to make sure he gets a healthy dose of minutes, be it to help out Domantas Sabonis or potentially play alongside Domantas Sabonis?
I think Jonas Valanciunas has shown himself to be so valuable that you can't afford to not find minutes for him, right? And one of the things that Valanciunas gives you is the luxury that the Kings haven't really had over the last couple of years, which is Sabonis can step off the floor and you don't like plummet. Right, early in this season, when Sabonis would exit, those minutes without Sabonis on the floor were typically pretty bad, to a point where Sabonis was having to play 38, 39, 40 minutes a night sometimes. So Valanciunas gives you the ability to handle those minutes, but Valanciunas should not just be playing, in my opinion, 12 to 15 minutes a night, right? So you need to find a way. Doug needs to find a way, and it's easier said than done, of course. Ooh, there's some sweets. I might sneak into one of these. He needs to find a way to have those two share time together on the floor, even if it's only for 2, 3, 4 minute stretches, and then go from there, right? Because what I don't want to see is Valanciunas doesn't have to be a starter for this team. It wouldn't work, I don't think, for Sabonis and Valanciunas to start together.
Sure.
But I don't want to see Valanciunas go back to mid-teens minutes per game, just like I don't want to see 18 minutes a night for Keon Ellis. I think both of them have proved they're too valuable and too impactful on the defensive end of the floor to just be relegated to bench player minutes. And even the same with Jake LaRavia, right? It's a tough problem to have for a coach because only so many guys can play. But if you were to tell me, hey, DeMar DeRozan is only going to play 36 minutes tonight, or so Jake LaRavia can have 14, and Domantas Sabonis is only going to play 34 minutes tonight, so that you could find 15.
Well,
or 16.
I got great news, Matt. None of this matters because Domas is out tonight.
Oh, well, cool.
I got to be honest. Anyway, I did not expect that at all. Oh, now that's very nice. Okay.
Here's a sweet at the Chase Center, so we can feel better.
It's nice. That's nice. It's very nice sweet. It's very good.
Welcome out. Well, this is like the center court suite.
Oh, yeah, that's big time.
This is the suite.
That's Lakeup suite right there. That's good stuff. So now, that's way too small to be Lakeup suite, but...
This is where Sabonis will watch the game, apparently.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, Jason Anderson tweeted just minutes ago, or 8 minutes ago, that Domantas Sabonis has, in fact, been ruled out for tonight's game against the Golden State Warriors. So, just erase everything Matt and I were just talking about. I didn't expect that. I was surprised. You guys got to practice yesterday. They said he was out there on the court. It felt like he was progressing in the same way that Malik Monk was progressing. I did have the thought of the back-to-back, Matt, with Golden State and Phoenix. But honestly, I thought you'd want him tonight. And if you decided to do the not playing back-to-back thing right away, then you'd have Valanciunas go tomorrow. But I don't know.
Yeah, I'm the same way. If it's a back-to-back thing, then you're picking the wrong game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this Warriors game, you got to get. The Suns, sure, you'd like to keep separation from them, but they're not nearly as much of a threat. Plus, like, I have full confidence in Jonas Valanciunas' ability to handle, like, Mason Plumlee. Like, I'm not too concerned about that. Not that the Warriors have a big man that you need Sabonis to match up with necessarily, but the best version of your team has Sabonis, and if he's available to go for any of these two games, this Warriors game is the one that you need to get. So, and we know, right, this is a decision from the Sacramento Kings. This is not a decision from Domantas Sabonis.
Sure.
Sabonis would have been out there yesterday, right? He wants to play. He's ready to go. He's probably fighting to get back as much as possible, and he's probably more disappointed than all of us combined that he's not playing in this game because he recognizes the significance of this game. Again, thankfully, the Kings have a player in Jonas Valanciunas to where this is not catastrophic news for the Kings against the Golden State Warriors tonight. But it's definitely, don't get me wrong, it's definitely a letdown.
Shams Charania, 24 seconds ago, we were literally just talking about this. De'Aaron Fox will undergo season-ending surgery on Tuesday for tendon damage in his left pinky. Literally everyone on the planet knew that this was going to happen. And San Antonio has full-on shut it down for the season. De'Aaron Fox will undergo season-ending surgery on Tuesday for tendon damage in his left pinky. Matt, and obviously De'Aaron Fox is none of our business anymore, but that is an NBA story. Correct me if I'm wrong. Does he have to have surgery on the other hand too? I know the pinky is the one that is being literally like propped up by tape. But is there something
right.
– I felt like he had two hand injuries, but I could absolutely be wrong.
Well, he hurt his – was it his thumb that he hurt in the playoffs? I genuinely don't – he's that man has had so many injuries to his hands that it's hard to keep track.
And the pinky,
I honestly, to be honest, dude.
The pinky he hurt in training camp, right? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's just the pinkies that all I remember talking about, but that doesn't mean that I haven't just gotten used to him having another lingering issue.
Yeah, actually, Shams just tweeted that. Fox suffered the tendon injury during training camp in October and played through the ailment this season.
So I don't understand why you didn't just do this after the Spurs-Kings game. Like, what more did you run out De'Aaron Fox for? Although he is coming off of, like, he had a 34-point near triple-double the other night for San Antonio against Dallas. So maybe you wanted to end it on a high note for him. And I know he shared with us after the Kings-Spurs game that he was going to go to, when he went down to L.A., he was going to see a specialist. And he had kind of a throwaway line in there that caught my attention. He was like, yeah, they might even do the surgery right then and there. I'm like, huh? They might look at it and say it needs surgery now. So the door was certainly going to be open to him doing this. I'm glad he's doing it. It makes sense for him. As soon as Wimby went down, it makes complete sense for the San Antonio Spurs. They're going to be in great shape starting next season. They need De'Aaron Fox at 100%. And if anybody has seen the pictures or seen De'Aaron's hand up close, you know that finger is not bending the right way.
Yeah,
and that finger has had an impact. Now, he's not using it as an excuse. He, in fact, has dismissed it as an excuse all season long when you've asked about it. Like, we've asked about that hand when he was here in Sacramento almost on a weekly basis, and he would just dismiss its importance. But it clearly had an impact. It had an effect. It was the right decision for him, the right decision for San Antonio.
Yeah, so again, De'Aaron Fox will undergo season-ending surgery on Tuesday. Of course, that is San Antonio Spur De'Aaron Fox. So his season is done. That is something we all expected to happen after the Victor Wembanyama issue. I don't want to call it an injury. It is an issue, the blood clot issue. More importantly for us, Jason Anderson tweeted a few moments ago that Sacramento Kings center Domantas Sabonis, who I think we all expected was going to return tonight against the Golden State Warriors on TNT, will in fact not return. He has been ruled out. It appears it'll be Jonas Valanciunas once again starting for the Sacramento Kings in a group that I'm sure has that ass whooping that they got at home on the at the Golden One Center still on their mind. It was 132-108, and that was the game that prompted the meeting and got this team all in sync. And I think the Kings are doing some. I think the Kings got some really good things going on right now, you know, despite the fact the way the last two games have gone. Do you think it was just getting settled in a little bit and allowing LaVine to find his place and getting him in the mix with everybody else?
Well, Zach LaVine's shooting over 60% from three-point range over the course of, like,
that's,
2 weeks.
That certainly helps.
Right, that definitely helps you. But even so, like, that, the defense doesn't have anything to do with that, right? At what I thought the Kings have been doing really, really well is I think they've been doing a good job, like, kind of taking on Doug Christie's identity and establishing the physicality. And that's where I felt they were completely lacking against New York, right? The Knicks came in and just beat and bullied the Kings,
yeah,
like, beat them up,
yeah,
pushed them around, yeah, right? And I asked Jonas Valanciunas after that game, like, hey, like, you know, the Knicks are like a physical team. And he said, like, we're a physical team too. Like, we want to play that way as well. We expect to play that way. So be it the letdown of the – these are not valid excuses, by the way, but it is a reality of what could have happened. The letdown of the OKC – or, sorry, the LA Clippers loss and then being tired after a double overtime or an overtime battle and then facing a team that's rested and on a losing streak and ready to beat you up. Plus, the Knicks are notoriously a bad matchup for the Kings. Like, I think it was just a compilation of everything that produced that result that we saw. I expect, like, Sacramento Kings to look a lot more physical. And this is a Warriors team where I think, especially with Jonas Valanciunas starting, you can establish physicality against this team. Like, don't let Doug Christie always talks about, like, and he could honestly have a flag thrown on him every press conference, but he talks about, like, let him feel you, touch him up are some of the terms that he says. Like, let Steph Curry – now we know Steph is going to get the whistle, so don't foul him from three like the Kings have been doing on a nightly basis.
They are experts at that.
It's unbelievable. Although, I guess when DeMar DeRozan gets his wrist hit, it's not a foul because
– incidental
whatever.
Contact.
And you know, bro, and you know how hard – I was so expecting, not to get on too much of a tangent, when they were looking at that shot clock reset and were counting down the seconds of the possession – you know how much I was expecting them to find a way to say that shot by DeRozan shouldn't count because the shot clock shouldn't have reset. I was ready for it. I'm glad they couldn't find a way to do that. But regardless, like, I expect the Kings to establish a physicality that they did not play with against New York, mm-hmm, and that they certainly did not play with against the Warriors in that first game after the All-Star break. But that's been pretty consistent with how they've played in the other five wins since that time. So Sabonis being out is a bummer, but Valanciunas being out there means you've got the biggest guy on the court, right? Like, Draymond will say something, but I'd like to see Draymond step to Jonas Valanciunas a couple times tonight. I think Valanciunas feels pretty safe about that potential roadblock in his way.
Who sets the tone for physicality on the court for the Kings?
That's a great question.
I realize it probably starts with Doug, but, like, when you're talking about the actual, you know, the guys on the floor.
I mean, it's hard not to say Valanciunas just because of how big that he is. But I think Keon Ellis took a lot of that responsibility too as a starter, to where he was Keon is not a guy that, like, ran through guys, but he's like a nuisance, like almost like a fly or a gnat or a bug. Like, he would establish the tone at least perimeter defensive wise, and then you'd have this massive human being in Jonas Valanciunas in the paint waiting for any guards that tried to attack the basket. So I think it was a combination of the two of them really establishing that defensive presence. And then, like, for LaVine and DeRozan, I'm never looking at the two of them to lead the charge defensively. But if the two of them are active in passing lanes and communicating and talking, I think that matters a lot. When I asked Doug before the Knicks game about, like, what's been going right with the team defense, the first thing he said was communication. The communication's been better. And you best believe that two veterans like DeRozan and LaVine are expected to be some of the best communicators on the team, especially on the defensive end of the floor. So I would say the physicality, the tone is set by Valanciunas and when he was a starter, Keon Ellis. But to me, LaVine and DeRozan, while they're not expected to make big defensive plays, they can communicate and they can lead on the defensive end by example. And we've been seeing kind of a combination of that. Plus, we've seen DeRozan a little bit ticked off at times too. Yeah. Now, sometimes it's been to the ref, but there were a couple times where DeRozan, you could tell, was willing to go right at a guy on both ends of the floor because he felt he was fouled or whatever the case may be. So I'm all for that kind of chip on their shoulder level of Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan. And hopefully the Kings get that tonight after they were embarrassed by the Knicks and embarrassed by the Warriors last time they played.
You know what I chuckled at a little bit, Matt, and you'll appreciate this because you've got work to do tonight, is Kings hypothetically get a win tonight. You come back, get ready tomorrow, and we're talking about the Kings, and it's like, oh, by the way, they need to do it again tonight. They have, meaning tomorrow, they have to do it again on Friday night against the Phoenix Suns, or you throw this game away. It's the second night of a back-to-back. I understand that that's tough. You're playing a team, like, I keep thinking, yeah, Phoenix isn't dead. They're going to keep fighting, and then I watch them and go, no, I think they are dead. Phoenix looks like they're waiting out the season. Like, they're just trying to get the season over with. And while I don't believe you, it'd be great if the Kings won every game that they played moving forward. I think you can get selective with your losses, and you don't want it to be the one against Phoenix tomorrow.
I mean, Chris Biedermann shared the record, and I'm trying to do this off of memory, so I may get it wrong. But I think he shared that this season the Kings are 12-21 against teams above 500. And then there's something like 22 or 21-10 or something like that against teams below 500. And now, of course, that takes it a full context of the whole season, not Doug Christie, because I think the Kings have a winning record under Doug Christie against above 500 teams.
Yeah.
So there's the Doug Christie kind of aspect of that, but then there's the whole season aspect of that. And like, if you look at this upcoming schedule and you look at the, I think 11 of the next 18 games, the final 18 games, 11 of them are against above 500 teams. And like, you wouldn't shock me at all if you told me, if we're going on that same win percentage that they've had the whole regular season against above 500 teams, and the Kings are winning like three or four of those games max. So that means that, of course, that means after, they wait to see me, I swear.
I know, well, they love you. It's Matt George live at the Chase Center in San Francisco.
They, like, if I'm the Kings, then you're looking at these two games against Phoenix. You're looking at, I think they have Portland still coming up. Like, Portland has beat the Kings twice this season, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, you've got games coming up against teams that, again, in theory, you should be beating. But I don't know how you can afford to drop any of those games, both Suns games included. So you're 100% right. Like, regardless of what happens today, the Kings need a win as a pick-me-up. But even if they lose this game tonight, there's no excuse for tomorrow. And maybe that's one of the thinking behind having Sabonis sit out tonight and play tomorrow, because they know they absolutely cannot afford to drop a game like Phoenix, and they want Domas for that rested on the second night of the back-to-back. Maybe that's the theory. I don't know. I still would play Domas tonight if he's available. He's clearly not. But yeah, the Kings, like, it's going to be great whatever they can do tonight. Hopefully they can get this win, but it'll be celebrate it, get on the bus or get on the plane, head to Phoenix, and you can't lose tomorrow night.
The Sacramento Kings can't seem to get a disgruntled franchise player story out of the media, but boy, they've got injury news on lock. We have no clue if Domas is still injured, if this is a strategic thing where, like Matt just said, maybe they're holding him out till tomorrow. Maybe he, after the practice yesterday, maybe he didn't feel good. Maybe it was just like, as simple as it's not ready yet. But this is the one thing that the Kings can keep from everybody is I have no idea what it is. So I guess we'll find out tomorrow when the injury report comes out, because you guys will ask your questions tonight. No one's going to answer them, and we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Hamstrings are no joke, too, yeah, right? Especially for bigs. Like, if you have a lingering hamstring injury, and it could be one of those things, too, where he worked on it yesterday. He had a good practice. It was productive. He woke up this morning and tried to get out of bed and went, ow, okay, this maybe I'm feeling it now, right? So hamstrings you want to be careful with. And look, the Kings are operating with the understanding or with the belief that they're going to be playing beyond 82 games. Right. So rushing DeMontis Sabonis back is counterproductive to what they're trying to do. So they're going to be safe, and they do feel they have a pretty good insurance policy in place in terms of Jonas Valanciunas, to where they can take the bumps now and win games now to put him in a position to be as close to 100% as he can be, so that when the Kings play their play-in games, or when hopefully they make it to the playoffs and meet OKC or whoever in the first round, that they'll have the best version of Sabonis available, which they're going to need to have any chance.
How you feel about this stretch coming up? Like this, we went from the Utah, Charlotte, stretch. Things, started to get a little tougher, and then we had this week with the Clippers, Knicks, Warriors. We got the Suns coming up on Friday, and then it gets bad with teams at the top of both conferences. Knowing the way that they've played over the last seven games or so, really just the New York Knicks being the complete outlier. What do you think?
Yeah, surprise, surprise. I'm not optimistic.
I understand.
I'm not feeling too great about it. I don't think things are going to be nearly as bad as that Knicks game. Like, I think the Kings will play the Cavaliers, and they will play the Thunder and Boston even. I think they'll play them better, or at least put up more of a fight than they did in that Knicks game. I'm pretty confident in that.
Yeah.
But there's one thing, like, this isn't the Kings just want to put up a fight. This is the Kings need to win basketball games.
Right.
Right. And I think, unfortunately, I think that the way, especially the Nuggets game and the Clippers game went, I think it's exactly what I thought this team was, or it's just affirmation or reaffirming my belief in this team that they are more than talented enough to be competitive. They should arguably have won those games, but when it came down to it, they weren't able to close it out. They weren't able to seal the deal. I have full confidence in the Kings' ability to beat the Suns twice. I have full confidence in the Kings' ability to beat Portland or these other under 500 teams. The Bulls next week on Thursday, full confidence, even though that's the second out of a back-to-back, full confidence they'll be able to handle that game. I believe they've crossed that bridge to where, under Doug Christie, I'm not afraid of those Detroit Pistons-type losses from last season. I think that fear has been handled by Doug, which is a huge credit to him.
For sure.
But with the juggernauts that are coming through the Golden 1 Center next week, like the Kings, I don't think we can hope that the Kings will steal a game or two, but to expect the Kings to win even one of the Cleveland, OKC, Boston games is a tough ask. So I'm in the boat that where the Kings are at is who they are. It's unfortunate because I don't think they're going to make it out of the play-in as a ninth seed. I think they'll make it to the second game, but I don't know if they'd make it past either the Timberwolves, who are playing really well right now, or the Clippers, who just beat you in a hard-fought game the other night. So I don't think this is a playoff team, and I think the Kings are going to be in the exact position that you don't want to be, which is right in the middle. Right, you're going to lose your draft pick. You made the play-in, but even if you make it to the playoffs, you're probably at best winning one game in a playoff series. I don't like where the Kings are at, but this is where they have to ride it out for the rest of the season. I just don't have high hopes.
Are you married to winning two playoff games or play-in games? Excuse me. Like that's what you think they'll have to do.
Yes, I think 7 or 8 is still more than achievable, and I think when Sabonis comes back, if they can get that, if they can keep at least some level of the defense that they've been showing consistent, while also getting that boost offensively that I expect from Sabonis coming back, I think that will be enough to that will be enough to put them in the conversation for 7 or 8, that they're still very much in the hunt for that. But if you were to ask me right now, am I picking the Kings to stay in 9 or picking the Kings to move up to 7 or 8?
Yeah.
I don't believe that they're going to be able to do it. They're more than capable of doing it. I just don't see it at this point in time. I don't think they're going to win enough of these games with really difficult opponents coming up to secure that. They won't lose enough to fall out of it, in my opinion, but they won't win enough to catch some of these teams that are playing good basketball right now ahead of them.
Mrs. Mac-10 brings up a great point. Do you have like an Apple Watch on or something to count all of these steps that you've taken here around the Chase Center today?
I don't, but I'm getting my exercise in. Let's see if they're done playing music so I can show you. I mean, I know I'm a Warriors hater, but this is one of the worst courts. It's their court that has like the 3D of the Golden Gate Bridge or whatever. Let's see. I don't know how well you can see it. You probably can't see it too well.
No, not zoom. Not really.
Zoom. Yeah. It's one of those, you'll see it when you guys watch TV tonight, but it's one of their alternate courts that has like the 3D version of the bridge, and then they're red and blue and then kind of a gold or whatever. I'm hating on it. But I've got good steps in.
We've been trashing the Chase Center for about 45 minutes now. And I mean, maybe we've been trashing it for about 2 or 3 years now, and rightfully so. I will say there is one thing I very much like about the Chase Center, and it's lighting. I think their lighting for basketball games is, it's beautiful. Like, it looks so good on television.
When you get into the arena itself, it's great. Like, it's gorgeous. And it gets pretty loud in here, but the everything else, the concourse and everything around, also Thrive City outside the arena is gorgeous too. But getting into this arena and finding your way to your seats is an adventure in itself.
Oh, that is, it is brutal. Absolutely. It is not the fan friendliest arena, but Matt George is the fan friendliest reporter as he took us on another tour of the Chase Center as we prepare for the Kings and the Warriors tonight. We appreciate you so much hanging out. We appreciate the calls, the texts, and all of that good stuff. Kevin John, what up, boy?
I can't hear you, brother, but you look great.
My man, Kevin John right there. Good stuff as the ABC 10 crew gets ready for the Kings-Warriors tonight. We appreciate you so much for being with us. The Purple and Black pregame show is coming up next. We will see you here tomorrow, beginning at 10 a.m. with the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.